It's Wednesday, the 5th of April, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And you join us this week on what is probably our penultimate show of the season. Playoff weekend rapidly approaching, and the Devils are going.
Woo!
And the Storm, so this week we're going to look back at those, the two-legged games. For having a quick look at the other games in the quarterfinals, just confirming, as we all know, that me and Sean are hockey geniuses and predicted all the results correctly. Looking at some news around the league before previewing the big weekend itself, where the Devils go for a historic Grand Slam. But firstly, the Devils faced Manchester on Saturday night at home in the first leg of the quarterfinal, and quite a tense cagey affair, Sean.
Yeah, it was. It was quite tense. Manchester seemed to bring their A game, in fairness to them. It was very, very fast paced. It was a proper playoff game. I really, really enjoyed it, actually. And it just felt like you knew that this was a tournament which Manchester wanted to go out there and just lay it all on the line and go out with their best effort. And I thought they played really well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a team that plays a good style of hockey, and you know, they caused us trouble all season, and Saturday night was definitely no exception. But the Devils took the lead in the first period with just a beautifully worked power play goal from Patrick Astley.
Yeah, it was a great goal. Like you said, a perfectly worked power play. I think it was Fournier just throws it to the front of the net, and Asselin stood there right on the doorstep and banks it in, and it didn't stop it and take a shot. It was just a perfect swift flick of the wrist and straight in, and gave us the lead. And there was initially a thought that we'd scored a little earlier on in the game, but it was deemed that Guillaume Doucet had kicked the puck into the net.
Yes, yeah, and from your vantage point, I think you said it was you.
Yeah, I think it was rightfully disallowed, yeah.
And you're worth noting that Patrick Astley power play goal came just 16 seconds into our first power play of the game. Unfortunately, we were unable to capitalise on a further 5 attempts, but you know, Astley found just finding just a perfect location to stand and Fournier picking him out to get the goal. But we touched on Storm causing Devils problems, and the second period was, you know, that in a nutshell, Sean, with 2 goals from him, which saw him leading at the end of the second.
Yeah, and that sort of let the fans to be a bit panicky. Varley just throws one in from the blue line, and it's a bit of a floater, shorthanded, and just goes through Ben Bouncey. I think he'd want to have that one back, to be quite honest with you, but it was a pretty good shot. And then Mark Heatley, Andrew Hotham just doesn't quite track his man back as good as he'd like, and Mark Heatley, we've seen a couple of goals scored in like similar fashion, just driving down the wing and getting the puck on net. Bouncey's let a couple of those in this year, and it couldn't have been a better time for Manchester to score. They'd scored one shorthanded, and then to grab one like that and an unassisted marker, and to go into the second period break with the lead was huge. And there was a bit of panic in the rink.
Aaron, you know, you were sort of not that confident going into this tie. You know, trailing after 2 periods. You were starting to get a little bit twitchy about our chance of making the finals weekend.
Well, I was being twitchy for about a week solid before the game, but we conceded 2 kind of soft goals, you know, and we went into the break, and I think I spoke to you, Paul, and I was biting my tongue like, I told you so, but you know, we turned it around, so it wasn't that bad in the end. So. Pardon?
I just said I told you so.
Yeah, you did. I don't mind being wrong. I'm usually wrong.
Yeah, and sort of the turnaround started in the third period with that man again, Joey Haddad. It's been sort of the heart of everything good, Sean, getting us, you know, getting the game tied up early on in the third.
Yeah, and it was a great, great finish as well. Just drifts over the blue line into the slot, sort of lays himself off, cuts through the defenseman and just absolutely rips one. And it was literally just how clutch is Joey Haddad. Whenever you need a goal, a big goal, Joey Haddad is right there waiting to deliver. And he scored two great goals this weekend, in fairness to him.
Yeah. Obviously, come on to his one on Sunday night, but that was a hell of a goal. But the one on Saturday, you know, almost as good and just as important to get the Devils back in the tie. And Devils then rode on with that 6 minutes later. Scott Hotham getting the goal to send us into half time, if you like, a goal up.
Scrambling for Annette, and Scott Hotham is sort of humming and hard on whether to drive in and try and get a stick on it, and he commits himself and manages to get on the end of it. And I think it was really, really important to go up to Manchester with some sort of a lead. And yeah, that sort of filled me with, I think going up, I would have liked a bigger lead, but I was just grateful that we weren't going in behind, to be quite honest with you, because we weren't awful in the first two periods. I thought Manchester just gave us a really good game. I thought they were excellent, and they pressed us hard, and eventually they seemed to tire a bit, and I was glad that we managed to take a lead up there.
Yeah, worth taking a lead, and worth noting that Omar Pasha didn't play. You've got to assume through injury, but a big loss to the team, Aaron. He's a solid player as well as the coach.
Yeah, you know, he's. I think he's a fantastic player. You know, he's probably one of the better D-men in the Manchester side, so I think for them to be missing one of their key players and probably one of the biggest influences on the ice, it was a big loss. But you can't fault Storm for their attitude and the way they played that game. So I thought they played absolutely incredible. And, you know, we slipped up a little bit for a small period of the game and they capitalized, jumped straight on it. And if I was Storm, you know, taking only a one goal deficit into their own building, I would have been a little bit confident. But it didn't all play out that way.
Oh, but yeah, I think we talked about the way up, Sean, that was the exact type of road game that your Devils would have played back in the 10 days when we were, you know, very rarely the favourites in a playoff quarter final, but consistently you've got good results, and taking those narrow deficits back into it to a rink like Manchester's and like the tent was, you know, it can just play right into your hands.
Yeah, it definitely can, and they you know, it did really play into their hands, because they managed to tie it up early on. They managed to sort of level the tie, and I sort of did start to sort of wonder whether Manchester were going to be that kind of Devils of old who scalp results against the big boys. And yeah, it's a tough place to go, and they know how to play there better than anyone else. It's their home rink. They play half of their games there through the year. I know we played a couple of seasons there, but it's still difficult for us to adapt from week to week to play in a different ice surface. And it was going to be a real challenge, and they gave us a scare early on.
They definitely did. Eight minutes, Darren Dzinski. Put the Storm in the lead after, you know, a really high paced start from the Storm, which, as it happened, they couldn't maintain. But to me, it looked like a team that they knew they were short benched. You know, they're a three line team anyway, and they were missing Pasha as well. So they're playing two and a half lines, five D men, and they were playing a four line team. So I think they knew they were going to tire and must have just thought, well, the first 10 minutes we've got to go all out, try and get a lead and cling on. But you know, they managed to get the one goal, but couldn't do any more. So just couldn't get themselves that extra little foothold in the game.
Yeah, and I think they did have a couple of chances. In fairness to them, they did try and create a little bit, and they did look worn out. And like you said, Paul, this is where the four lines really comes into benefit with us. Is when we play those teams like Manchester, they had to travel twice. They were bodies down, and it just worked out perfectly for us. I thought we played a really good game. And to be honest with you, even at the stage where they leveled the tie, I always thought that through the whole game, we didn't get anywhere out of, like, we played well, but by no stretch was that our best. No way at all. We had another couple of gears to go to if we really needed them.
Yeah. And when that first goal went in, a couple of people around me were talking about, you know, Manchester looked more up for it. You know, they had started quite quickly. But I just felt, yeah, if we were 8.5 minutes into a game in Manchester normally and it was 0-0, would you be stressed? And, you know, that's effectively where we were.
Yeah.
But, you know, just for Manchester, it got the crowd up, it got them up. But yet again, it's that man. And what a goal Joey Haddad opened the night with for us, straight off an Olmo face-off win. And just a short-handed goal that I can't remember seeing a short-handed finish like that. Literally, the puck was on his stick, and I didn't see anything until the back of the net moved. It was just a bullet.
Yeah, as I was leaving the arena, one of the Storm fans asked me what the name was of the guy who scored it, and he said, that's one of the best goals I've seen in a long, long time, because it was an absolutely unreal backhand, like, proper roofing goal. And like we said earlier, Joey Haddad just comes up with another absolute pearler, and, well, what more can I say? It was an absolute exquisite finish.
Indeed. And yeah, that gave the Devils the goal, gave them that little spring in their step. It didn't kill off Manchester, but I think, you know, sort of deep down, they probably realised that there was a mountain that they had to climb, that perhaps not that they weren't equipped for in terms of skills and ability, but in terms of energy, in terms of lines, you know, that just...
Yeah.
Not the name of the coffin, but that was the start of it. And 1833 in, I think probably was when it was all done, Chris Culligan takes the puck around Mike Clementi and pops it into the back post to give us a 2-goal lead on the tie. And, you know, nice to see Culligan, you know, getting a couple of games and getting on the score sheet as well, Sean.
Yeah, well, he's just come off the back of being voted the player of the year, and that breeds confidence. And it showed. I thought he played really well in both games, and for him to get on the score sheet was a real good reward for him.
Yes, the Devils went in happy, and then your second period, 8 minutes in, Gleeson Fournier gets the last goal of the game, and you pretty much wrapped it up from there. But you know, another great goal. It was three high quality goals the Devils scored on the night.
Yeah, it was, and like I said, we played great, and I still don't think we were at our best, and gives us a lot of optimism, I think, for the week ahead. I listened to some comments that a couple of Blaze fans made, and they said that we limped past Manchester in the quarterfinals, and I just thought that is that is someone who did not watch the game, because although admittedly the first game was, you know, a bit cagey and we probably weren't at our best. In Manchester, we weren't at our best, but we still comfortably took them apart and probably could have hammered them if we needed to. But why bother? What's the point?
Yeah, I think the first leg was a case of, you know, not everything clicked. Manchester played an excellent road game.
Yeah.
The second leg was, we'll do enough. And we did enough. It wasn't that things weren't clicking. It wasn't that we weren't getting it right. It was just we didn't need to do any more. And like you said, I think if in that second period Manchester had got a goal, got a couple of goals, we could have ramped it up, you know, quite easily. Yeah, I think it was all there if we needed to, and we'd have just got back in it. I think it would have taken something monumental for Manchester to see us off in that second leg. Such was the way that we looked like we were playing within ourselves.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
Which, you know, it potentially could sound disrespectful to Manchester, but I think it's just a testament to the gulf between the two teams in terms of, you know, obviously league placing, first place 8, the biggest difference in the playoffs, and as well, it's just numbers. It's a numbers game. If a team can put up 4 lines, a team can put up 3 lines, especially over 2 legs with the travel, the 4-line team is going to win the majority of those, even if they're an equal quality team. And you know, obviously that's not the case here. So, you know, it was great to see the Storm Shelter nice and busy, Sean. It was a really well attended game, and, you know, a really good away crowd with some good noise from the Devils fans, but, you know, a noisy home crowd as well. So bodes well for the future for Manchester.
Yeah, just want to say, just before I come on to that, that it does show that twice in 2 years we've played the home leg first and then qualified. So just wanted to put that out there. But yeah, I thought that the crowd was excellent for both teams. The Devils fans made some good noise, and it was really well attended. Manchester have done a great job in getting some good crowds, and I think they sold out 3 times this year, which is great. You know, they're a young club still. I know that organisation and that it has a history with the Phoenix and all that sort of thing, and people have. They probably gained a few more fans due to the sad demise of the Phoenix, but yeah, they've done good work. Like Neil Russell was saying on the ice afterwards, the guys have worked so hard all year, not only on the ice but in the community, and making the point of getting people to want to come to the games and giving back to the community there, and that pays dividends, and their crowds have been good, and yeah, like you said, it bodes really well for the future.
Yes, yeah, so congratulations, Storm, on a good season. Obviously, making the playoffs for the first time will be is a big thing for them as well. So, yeah, all round an enjoyable weekend. Right, well, that's the games. I suppose we should probably choose a player of the week. I feel like we've probably already... There's one player that's been mentioned quite a few times who's probably going to be a bit of a shoo-in. But, Aaron, who gets your vote?
Is there really any competition? He scores 2 big key goals that go on to win us both games. So what more can I say about Mr. Clutch, Joey, dad? You know, that's my vote. Been fantastic all year, and he seems not to be slowing down. And 3 points in his first 2 playoff games. I hope he carries on stuff like that for the next 2 and we do big things.
Sean, are you in agreement, Stephen?
100%, yeah. Like Aaron said, clutch guy, clutch goals, and they were 2 worldies as well. And if he scores a goal in every game going into the playoffs, then yeah, if he scores a goal on each game this weekend, I think we'll be happy with Joey Haddad. So yeah, that's my vote.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with him doing that either. But yeah, it's definitely Dad, Joey Dad. You both use the word clutch, and I think that is just the thing that describes him this year the best. He's just consistently one of the best players on the ice. You know, people might stand above him, but his performance has hardly dropped this year. You know, he's picked it up for the playoffs, and as you both said, hopefully that carries on. So we have a unanimous winner. Congratulations to Joe. Looking around the league, some interesting ties. Belfast beat Fife quite comfortably over the 2 legs to secure their place at the finals weekend. But the hottest rivalry in Europe produced a couple of interesting games, with Nottingham taking a 3-goal lead from the first leg before Sheffield came back to win in overtime. There being the injury to Mika Wiekman in the second leg following a collision... I'm sure you've said something very similar to this before, following a collision with a Sheffield Steeler.
Don't forget the incident with McGrattan and Fitzgerald in the game in Nottingham as well. That was excellent.
That was beautiful.
Dan Green comes in and I think let 3 goals in that, you know, saw Sheffield progress. Sean, the McGrattan incident though was quite an interesting one and caught on camera and shared quite widely on social media.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, I genuinely just enjoy watching it. I've watched it a good couple of times now, and it just makes me laugh every single time. Fitzgerald wants to go with McGrattan, and basically draws a penalty for it just for being a general douche.
General douche, I think, is probably the penalty the ref would have called if it was allowed.
Yeah, you know, you could just imagine the referee going to the cinema and just saying he's having 2 minutes for being a general douche. Yeah, and so proceeds to the referee's got his arm up and McGrattan waves to him saying bye bye, you're going to the box, and then on the delayed penalty, the Panthers go back up the ice and McGrattan finds the puck somewhere and scores, and it's just biblical. Like, I've watched it so many times and it makes me laugh every time. So good. Karma at its best.
Yeah, I'm sure Fitzgerald will take the wider karma of going to the playoff final weekend, but as a standalone moment, as you both said, it is highly amusing and would recommend finding that online. Aaron, I your thoughts on the Weekman incident, you know, I think all of us will have found, as most fans in the league would have done, obviously found out on social media at the time. And the thought is, oh, here we go again. Sheffield have injured a starting netminder. Obviously happened to us just a couple of weeks back. Having, you know, seen the incident, what's your thoughts on it?
It doesn't look that intentional due to the fact that, you know, he's just following the puck and, you know, going hard to the net. But I think the fact that he does make contact, and it's a lot of contact, and the fact that he makes no movement to avoid Weekman whatsoever makes me think that maybe he's not trying to cause injury, but he's trying to make his presence felt. And I think that was literally the change in the game. You know, you lose your starting netminder, or things can only go downhill from there. And it did. But I, obviously we all wish well to Weekman, but it just must be gutting to go out by injury, and then your last game of the season, you're out by injury, you don't know what's happening because you're probably unconscious, but you lose no time. But if I can't believe that a player that has stature like Brian McGrattan didn't go looking for retribution and doing something about it. But it's Steelers, they've done it to both our goalies. They do it to possibly on his day, one of the best goalies in the league, and nothing come of it. So,
and yeah, and I think Brian Stewart has also, you know, been taken out by Fitzgerald. Pretty sure it was the start of this season.
Yeah.
It's not last season. It's, you know, there's a bit of a pattern there. It's there's only so many times it can happen. A question I was going to ask Sean, as someone who's sort of been watching hockey a little bit longer, when perhaps things were a little bit less ban happy. Aaron obviously mentioned retribution from McGrattan. I think the penalties meant that Steelers were sitting a 5-minute power play, Panthers had a 2-minute. So if McGrattan had got any retribution, it's going to put Nottingham on the kill at some stage.
I think that Nottingham had also had a 2. So, Nottingham had a 2, and then they had a 5 plus game plus, had a 2 plus 5 plus game.
I didn't realise the 2 cancelled out, so there was only a 5.
Yeah,
so
they had a coincidental 2, and then the 5, yeah.
So it's a 5 minute
major.
Fair enough. So, you know, there's, you know, McGrattan could potentially have done something. Obviously, when you started watching, so you had, so obviously Mike Ware was still around, Dennis Maxwell playing, players like that who didn't happen. And you didn't get that much contact with goalies because people knew there'd be retribution. And for me, it's too easy now that, yeah, okay, he didn't intentionally go and hit the netminder, but, you know, 15 years ago, probably longer before we watch him, but would players have taken that route if 15 years ago, when, you know, the start of the Elite League?
It's hard to say. It really is. I think that these days the guys are more, you know, we talk about sport in general, and the, you know, sport's always been about to win. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's always, like, that's why you play sport. Well, you play sport to win trophies and be successful. But I feel like there's, like, so much more pressure on athletes these days to deliver and win, based on the fact that they're professional and they're earning more money and all that sort of thing, that there's more pressure on them to succeed. And that most of them will do it almost at any cost. And I think, that's just my personal opinion on it. I think that hockey's a lot different to football, but I still feel like the caliber of player and the standard of this league has gone so high that it is prestigious to win the Elite League and any trophy that you win in it. And and organizations want winners. And if you like, if Armstrong really likes it in Sheffield and he wants a contract next year, he's going to do everything he can to go out there and win. And if he thinks I can drive this net and almost score a goal, or I can go wide and slightly avoid the goalie, then that's the, you know, he's going to go for the goal every time. And I think that's the way that the world is at the moment with regards to professional athletes.
Which is fair enough, but would he have done it if he was 90% sure that he's going to get his head taken off in, you know, probably an illegal move, but by doing that, you're risking injury yourself?
Well, yeah, but the deterrent is there for him. You know, if he goes...
It's not there. I think the way that, you know, instigator penalties, there isn't a deterrent anymore.
Oh, so if you're asking me about the instigator penalty, then I think it's completely wrong.
You can't just give someone a whack for going near the netminder anymore because you're likely to get a 5+ game for
Tech. But that's what I'm saying is that is where the instigator rule comes from. When Mike Weir was playing, when Michael Williams was playing, you didn't get that penalty because it didn't exist. If you run a goalie, Mike McWilliam is going to come and steamroll you, and you're both going to get 5+ game, and one may get an additional 2 for the charge on the goalie and the goalie interference. But with the instigator penalty now, that does give the players the sort of situation where they can go in and do that, because if Brian McGrattan does jump in, as you say, he's getting tossed. So, you know, Brian McGrattan doesn't want to be tossed from the game, does he, heck? That is one place where the game is going wrong, is the instigator penalty should go to the person who run the goalie and not the person who gave him a paste in for doing it, because it's not right. It's not part of the game. And the instigator penalty in that case should go the other way. It's a completely broken penalty, and the sooner it's taken out or reevaluated, the better.
Yeah, but for me, it's difficult because, like you said, that contact with the goalie, it wasn't deliberate. He didn't run the goalie as such. Mm. He took a line that took him near the goalie. There needs to be something that protects the goalies better, because there's just too many goalie injuries at the moment for me. The goalie should be protected. They're not dressed to be hit. You know, the way they stand, everything they do is not, they're not ready to take a hit like every other player on the ice probably is. So if you've got them to get a penalty, the league needs to come down harder on things like that, even if it is, you know, possibly accidental, just to try and deter it. But sorry, Aaron.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, if it is a determined tactic from, you know, the Sheffield coaching, then first, I think it's, you bang out of order to risk. You're not just risking careers. It's more, you know, you had a guy unconscious on the ice with his wife sat by his side. That's, you know, there are some things bigger than sport. But if it does happen, if we do play Sheffield on the playoff weekend, I wouldn't have a problem if someone got, you know, a penalty for giving someone a whack around the head for getting too near bounds, because, you know, just it shouldn't happen. Aaron, a little bit of a rant about how hockey should be there, but you're about to say something, sorry.
Yeah, do you think Armstrong will get a ban?
It's Dobbs have announced there's no reviews today,
I suppose so. But I think that's another thing as well that bugs me most about the incident is, like, everyone, like, we are ranting and raving about, you know, protecting your goalie. Fair enough, John Armstrong got a 5+ game penalty, but his team still made it through to the final weekend, and he still gets to play in that final weekend. For me, I think that's wrong, because you've caused quite a serious injury to another player. You should be sitting at least a game for doing that. Like, whether it is intentional or not, you still cause a serious injury to a player. And if I was playing professional hockey and my coach turned to me, he said, go in hard at the goalie, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let's do it. And then next thing you know, bang, I'm in the final weekend and I'm playing. That's not a consequence, just missing 30 minutes of a game, that you know, Christ, I bet they had an early shower and went to bed. But I think it's just unfair that there's no retribution for things like that. Maybe not on the ice, but at least, you know, this DOPS is supposed to be player safety and all that, and they're not even going, and they're not even protecting players. They're letting things like this happen pretty much on a weekly basis, because it was only 2 or 3 weeks ago that Barnes got run and got a serious injury, and then Murdy the same night took a couple of bumps. But, all right, it wasn't serious, but it could have been.
It is difficult, you know. As much as I've said, I don't think it's right. I don't necessarily want to see bans run out for any contact with a goalie, because it will always happen, because pucks will be around the net. But I don't. If it wasn't Sheffield, I don't think it would have bothered me as much. Not because it's Sheffield, but because there's been a pattern through the season of it. Which, you know, if there was a team regularly injuring a goalie, it's not a Sheffield thing. It's a I don't know. There's coincidences, and then it just things happening too often for me. But yeah, that's Sheffield into the finals weekend. And then the one shock in terms of rankings from the weekend, Dundee comfortably knocking up Brea Clans 6-1 on aggregate, meaning that we'll play them in the semi-final, and also resulted in Ryan Finnerty, leaving his post as Brea head coach. Obviously their t-shirts for conference champions wasn't enough for them. The right decision, Sean, to remove Ryan Finnerty?
I think so. You look at the conference setup, and the conference setup means that, like it or not, Brea should have been the heavy favourite to win the league ever since it was put in place. They haven't done. And I think with the budget that they have and the fan base they have and all their and the resources, I just think that they should have won more than a conference. Like, they've not got to a Challenge Cup final. And, you know, they've only reached the playoff. I think Finnerty's only took them to the playoff weekend once.
Yeah.
And that's just not good enough for a team with Brea's sort of, you know, infrastructure and quality. And it's just not enough. And they say he's done a great job, and I'm sure he has put in some good measures there. And I'm sure that it was a professional place with him in it. And it's... Listen, it's sad to see someone lose their job, but it's going to be particularly sad for us, because I always enjoyed going and watching us beat Finnerty's team. But you hear so many good stories about Ryan Finnerty throughout the league, and I do wish him well and hope that he finds himself a job or as you know does himself good back home or whatever he chooses to do. And Brea, I think I'm really interested to see what they do, whether they bring in another full-time head coach or whether they go down the player coach route with ourselves in Belfast or whether we have seen the last days of that in this league with, you know, teams like Dundee and, you know, even Dundee have got a full-time head coach, Coventry, and whether that's dying out and they're going to go with a full-time head coach or whether they're going to switch things up a bit and get a player coach, who knows?
Yeah, and you know, you said, obviously, wishing all the best to Finnerty. You know, very few bad words about him. There was a lot of bad words about him as a player. You know, proper in the skin, but as a man, and you know, Steffi's done, you know, some, just from our point of view, the amount of fundraising he did in Brea on behalf of the match go is, you know, phenomenal. So yeah, definitely wish him all the best. But Aaron, for you as well, the right decision, just so, you know, there were many issues with Brea. They were out of the running very early this season in terms of the league, weren't they?
I think it's the right decision. You know, I think Finnerty ran his course up in Scotland, and you know he didn't do too badly. I get you look at the conference things, and he should have won it pretty much every year. But if you think of, you know, coming close 2 years in a row, I know this year wasn't a great year for him, but I think he had a lot of things to deal with. I'd say one of the worst important netminders in the league, and
But he signed him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. I know that's kind of down to him, but I think as well, like, some of the recruiting decisions he's made wasn't great this year, and it's sad that we don't get to wind him up when we go up there, because he loves our famous Ryan chant. But hopefully we'll see him around the league so we can do it in another rink, but, you know, who knows what the future holds.
Is there, you look at, and like Aaron just said, I just want to add in there with regards to the recruitment, you look at the changes that they made and, you know, they worked so hard to take Jeff Ulmer and get him signed up there when he was in close, you know, he basically was come, or apparently came close to signing with the Devils, and they beat us to him. They paid him more or something. They did something special to get him there. And then he was gone by, what, November?
October
even. And then you look at a guy like Trevor Hendricks, someone who Ryan Finnerty has talked about for years about liking his style and all that sort of thing. Signs him, gets him up there, and he's gone just past Christmas. Correct me if I'm wrong. So,
and he was benched a lot as well.
And he was sitting games. He was being the healthy scratch. And I just, he made a lot of mistakes recruiting. I think he put a lot of money into guys like Ulmer, Rosehill, Levitt, Pitt, and Becker were all filled up. And I think Zaikovsky was his sort of last, you know, his last resort in terms of a netminder, needed one with a passport. He's been very, very lackluster. I haven't rated him at all.
I think the net, it did look like there was a decision on, let's throw all our money on the ice and, oh, we've got this much left. What's the best netminder we can find with this little pot of money there? And it's a dangerous way to go. There's not many successful teams with very poor netminders. So,
just another quick one. I'll throw this to you, Paul, because obviously you know a little bit more about him. But is this a job you see being well suited to someone like Jared Adams, who's possibly looking at a return to hockey, or do you think that Brayeb will look for someone fresh?
That's a difficult one. I think it's sort of around the right level for Jared Adams. You know, as a Cardiff fan, you always think of him as being, you know, that person with a low budget who, you know, gets a team that, you know, maybe go a little bit further up the league than the budget allows. But he showed in Sheffield that with a budget, he could do it. He obviously took over a team, took him to the playoffs, signed his own team, then took him to a league championship. I think he's a winner. I think for me, he's been out of the league for a few years. He's been out of hockey as a whole. Sure, he's kept his eye on it. I'm sure he hasn't completely run away from it, but, you know, is someone who's, you know, left hockey the person to go to. And, you know, I'm not convinced that if we were in that situation, I don't think I'd be happy with any coach who'd been out of hockey for more than a short period of time. Especially when he seems like he's almost made, you know, a career outside of hockey. It's not like he's just been waiting for a job to come up. So
exactly, yeah, that's one way I was looking at it as well. There's also a strong rumor that Riley Emerson is a favourite for the job as well. Former Edinburgh Capitals coach.
And that's an interesting one. It's always difficult to judge a coach who's, you know, you've coached at Edinburgh. People say he did a good job. You know, Edinburgh still finished eighth, but it obviously signed a good team at the start of the year. Just, you'd imagine, you know, mainly finances prevented them staying together. But it's always difficult to judge, because I think when you, it's a lot of the time you've seen netminders used to play for teams that finished near the bottom of the table, and then the next year they get a chance, and you think, oh, they're not actually as good as you thought. It's just, you're almost nicer to them because they're at a team that shouldn't be good, and sometimes it can. So, you know, and it's a totally different job. Coaching Brayeb.
Kevin Reiter and Andrew Verner being prime examples there.
Yeah.
I'd give it a go to Mark O'Fale. He hasn't done a bad job with Dundee the last 2 years. Coventry didn't have a great career, but if you think they had two teams with smaller budgets than Brayeb, maybe he can do a better job of recruiting Finity done, and, you know, do good things. And I do rate Lefebvre. I think he's quite a good coach, and I don't think he recruits that bad. So I wouldn't mind seeing him in, like, coaching Brayeb. I think he's a decent coach.
I would personally rather him not go if he is a decent coach, because I really like Peter Brayeb.
Oh, yeah, okay, I get that, but I think if I was looking around the league to pick a coach up, I would, you know, I think Mark Coffey would look for that job. He may even apply for it or wherever you do to become a head coach of an elite league team, because he recruited well and he's in the playoff final weekend, so he can't be doing that bad with Dundee's budget, I suppose.
Indeed, and you know, you said what you need to do. It is usually applying, I think, unless it's Coventry, and then it's if you've played there in the last few years, you're the next one on the coach's merry-go-round. There's some very interesting setups in the Elite League. But I do feel like we've done a massive disservice to Dundee.
Yes, of course.
Sort of spoken a lot about Brayhead there with the Affinity News. But, you know, good to see him in the playoffs because of, you know, what they went through last year after, you know, doing the hard work of beating the Devils at home, you know, managing to overhaul it at the end of the second leg. And they've not scraped through against a higher place team. They've dominantly done it with a shutout in one of the legs as well. And, you know, a worthy team to make the playoffs. They've, you know, had a good season and, you know, in the end comfortably made the top eight with quite a few games to spare, Sean.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for Dundee. Their fan base are great. It's not the biggest club in the world. It's not the most glamorous club in the world, but the people up in Dundee love their team. And it's a great reward for them because they, like you said, the heartbreak of last year. I think it's their first appearance in the finals weekend. They are the only Scottish team there, so yeah, it's great. It is great for the Dundee fans to have a team to watch there, and you know, hopefully it's not, but it is one of those tournaments where Dundee could go and win it. You know, there's no doubt about it, and. It's great. It's good for their club. It's good for their fans. It's good for recruitment because it shows they grow in. They're moving on. They beat the biggest team in Scotland in the clan, and like you said, Paul, they did it quite comfortably, getting a shutout in Castle Clan, as they call it, or as I refer to it, as the shopping centre. But they've done a great job in Dundee with. I think they've got some great players. You look at a guy like Scarsella. They have a very good goaltender. They brought in a core like Kale Tanaka, Craig Sescon, those guys who've been to the playoff weekend and won it before. And yeah, they've got a great blend up and down the lineup, and really pleased for them. But I hope it comes to an end quite early for them.
Yeah. That sums it up perfectly. And just you mentioned Kale Tanaka, and I've just got a horrible memory of him scoring one of the goals last, running back to the bench.
Sorry.
Sat. But lightning twice and all those things, so hopefully not. So they're the tie. So, and I'm convinced it must be the first time, Sean, but four teams from four different countries with Northern Ireland, Scotland, England, and Wales represented.
Well done, Paul. Good for you.
What?
You can read.
Oh, thank you. Right, well, they're just being horrible to me. We're just going to end the podcast.
Tough crowd.
The awards ceremony that also takes place at the playoff weekend has had the nominations announced. I think it's safe to say Coach of the Year is Andrew Lord. But they haven't put a lot of thought into it. They've just gone with Walser and Thompson, who finished second and third. I think, as we discussed, a guy like Mark Lefebvre probably deserved to be on the nominations list for that. But, if it goes to anyone other than Andrew Lord, that's a ridiculous decision. But there's probably sorry?
Nothing, I'm talking to myself, sorry.
It'll be Ryan Finnerty as a shock fourth last minute entry.
But, you know, Aaron, just as a bit of podcast ruling, it's a great idea to just talk to yourself. It goes down really well, I believe. Forward of the year, though, obviously Joey Haddad is the nomination from the Devils. Devils have a nomination in every category. But Joey Haddad nominated alongside Matthew Roy and Vinny Scarsella of the Dundee Stars. Sort of biasly, I think, you know, Joey Haddad's got to be right in there with a shout. But Sean, how do you see that one going?
Yeah, I think a guy like Scarsella is almost nailed on for that one. I read a stat somewhere the other day that he's been involved in like 53.8% of Dundee's goals this year in some way, whether it's with an assist or a goal. And that is absolutely phenomenal for a guy to have that much influence on a team. And I can't say any more than that. I think he's been a great player, and carrying on where he left off from Manchester. You know, he didn't go for one of the big boys. He stayed with one of the smaller clubs, and he's done brilliant things up there so far this year. And he'll be hoping to add a couple more goals this weekend and ultimately take the title. So I think that's going to go the way of Scarsella. I personally think that Matthew Wire has had a reasonable year. There's no doubt about it. But I just can't see past Scarsella in terms of that category.
That is unreal, man. If you think you're involved in that percentage of goals, you know, how many, you know, it's going to be even more when he's on the ice. That he's not assisted on. You're probably looking at well over 60% of goals with him on the ice, and yeah, that is you know a difference maker. You think where would you be with a guy like that?
Yeah, it was something silly like that. It may not be exact, but it was definitely like almost just over half.
Yeah, the defenseman of the year, Andrew Hotham, is nominated from the Devils alongside Derek Walser and another giant, and I can't remember
Jim Vandermeer. Jim Vandermeer. My mate Big Jim.
Your mate Big Jim. Aaron, how do you see that one?
It can't be anyone else than Andrew Hotham, really, can it? You know, puts up 53 points, ties the Devils' leading scorer for this season, plays brilliantly. You know, yeah, everyone's going to think he's the worst thing since a gone off banana or whatever. He's an absolutely fantastic player. He's one of I'd go as far to say, apart from the Brits, he is one of literally our best players in the team, and he makes silly little mistakes, but the minutes he logs, you can't fault him for that. So if he doesn't win, it'll be an absolute travesty.
That's fair enough. I've never did any description of a hockey player involve a rotten banana? So
I was just looking at banana, and I thought they wouldn't like to eat a rotten one. So
okay, I think I preferred it when you were talking to yourself. goalie of the year, the nominations are Ben Bounds, Aaron Mustakovs, and I'm really not doing well here. Somebody else? Oh, Shane Owen from Fife.
Paul, before you go on, I thought I'd just correct you. It was Joey Martin, not Joey Dad, for forward of the year.
Was it really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. An hour later. Goal of the year, I personally think it should be Ben Bounds. I think he's had another solid year, probably not been quite as outstanding as last season, where there were some games where you just think, wow, but he's been solidly consistent. He's, you know, practically tied Moose in terms of his save percentage. His goals against average is the league leader. And he's, you know, backstopped the team to three trophies already. So for me, it's that. But I think Shane Owens is another good shout because he's just had a really solid year and has been a right thorn in our side at times. Sean, your thoughts on that one?
I personally think that, yeah, Ben Bounds has been excellent, every variation of the word. And like you said, he's backstopped us to a league title. What more can you ask of him? But I just feel like we've done that as a team. We won the league as a team, whereas Shane Owen has single-handedly won games for Fife, and he's been awesome, I got to be honest with you. I think there's been games where we played Fife this year where I thought we'd struggle to beat them. And for me, I think it's going to go to Shane Owen.
Excellent. And the last one is the MVP League Player of the Season.
Brits. Don't forget the Brits.
The Brits. So we got Mark Richardson, Colin Shields, and I forgot another one.
Ben O'Connor.
Ben O'Connor. It's always Ben O'Connor.
think you have them up in front of you, like me, but, you know.
Well, I was about to throw the MVP to Aaron for showing off, and then I confidently thought I knew the Brits, and I just can't do three things in a row at the moment. Playoff excitement is already kicking in, and I've lost the ability to speak and remember. Aaron, who's your Brit of the Year?
Well, me being a Devils fan, Richardson had one of his best years in a Devils shirt, points-wise, and yeah, I'd go too far to say points-wise, but Colin Shields, he has been absolutely fantastic this year. 49 points in the all in 26 goals, and that's not bad considering he's a 37-year-old man and he's a British player, so you know he's matching some of the top point scorers in the league, and he's a Brit, so if it's not him then it's a travesty. But I want it to be Mark Richardson, but I do think it'll be Colin Shields.
For me, it's that Colin Shields just seems, and especially over the last few weeks, he just seems to be scoring goals for fun, which obviously shows in his points. And you know, he's been a high-end Brit for a number of years, but seemed to be tailing off last season, I felt. But has come back absolutely flying this season and had a great year. Now, Aaron, who are the nominations for the MVP award?
MVP, you've got the probably best player, best D-man and player in the league. You've got Andrew Hawthorne, got top point scorer, Vinny Scarsella, and then you've got that guy who's finished fifth in points and had a pretty good season in Matthew Waugh. So, yeah.
As you described him when we talk about the D of the year, Andrew Hotham has been absolutely outstanding. It's difficult to say he's had as much of an impact as Scarsella has had on the Dundee team from Sean's purder of a little stat earlier. But you know, the difference is Andrew Hotham's team has finished top of the league. He's finished top of the D-man point scoring, led the league champions in points as well. That's a season that if that doesn't rank you as an MVP, then I don't know. I don't really know what you need to do as a D-man to win an MVP award, because he has just frankly been outstanding this year. Sean, is he for you as well?
Yeah, for me he is. Listen, he scored as much as he wants and as much as he did last year, and his all-round game has just gone up again. He's cut down more of his stupid penalties, you know, prone to one because he's that's just his personality, but just little things, he's cut down little penalties that he was taking last year. I feel like his skating has gone up a notch, he's a little bit faster, although he's a little cutting down his penalties, he's still got that nasty edge about him, and he just does everything you want. He'll fight if you want him to, he'll go out there and hit, he's not afraid to get physical, he just scores big goals, and his defensive play this year has been much, much better. I feel like this year, Mark Richardson scored a few more goals and Andrew Hotham has stopped a few more, and they've been a perfect defensive pairing, and Hotham is, in my mind, up there with the best player in the league, and that's why he deserves to win this.
Yeah, I think the point around Mark Richardson scoring a few more goals, I think, is almost directly linked to the fact Hotham's had a better defensive year. It's freed Richie to get up the ice a little bit more, and you'll make a bit more of an offensive contribution. And Aaron, is Andrew Hotham the one for you as well? I'm going to call you Andrew there. Long way.
Of course he is. Why, like, okay, I get Matthew was a decent player, and I get Vinny Scarsella has put up a lot of points, but neither of them won the league. Neither of them I think, in my opinion, played as well as Hotham has. Neither of them has scored key points and key goals as he has. And I just think he's been absolutely phenomenal all year. And he's over the three seasons that he's been here, he's probably one of our most consistent players points-wise. Pretty much exactly the same points every year. Minutes are going down a little bit, so he's learning, he's playing well, and I think the fact that his brother was here as well, I think he like tried to, you know, not like look. He said in interviews before that he looks up to his brother, and I think because his brother was there, I think he's been a little bit more defensively reliable, and it's proven, and he's been fantastic. So if we can keep him, I'll be very well. I'll be more gutted if out of everyone we sign back, he's not one of them, because he's, in my opinion, he's our best player.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's the awards, which is almost the most boring part of the playoff weekend, because obviously there has to be a third place game for some unknown reason. But it's time to talk about the playoff weekend. It's always equal parts exciting and disappointing, because, you know, once it's over, so is ice hockey for another season, which is always depressing. But, right, well, the league have announced there's going to be goal line technology. There's going to be four-man officials. It's going to be on BBC Radio 5 Live Extra, and it's going to be broadcast on a webcast. It all sounds a bit like the league are almost professional in that way. So, starting with the first game, Devils and Stars. Sean, is it just that the game last year where the Devils, you had a seven-position league advantage and it went so badly wrong, enough of a motivator for them to come out and make sure it doesn't happen again, do you think?
I don't think they need that motivation. I think the fact that they could be the first team in history to win a Grand Slam with the conference system in place is also right up there with their motivation. And, on the other hand, it couldn't be much worse for us, could it? So that's a one positive, is at least it won't be as bad as last year.
Oh, don't say it definitely won't be. Just you know, let's not tempt fate. But, you know, the Stars beating Brayhead is, you know, totally changed the look of the weekend for the Devils, because you think if Brayhead had got through, we'd be looking at a Steelers semi-final with probably a Giants final, and you know, no offense to the Stars, that's a much tougher weekend, and you know, the path for those 120 minutes, providing you get through the first one, is just a lot easier in terms of, you know, the quality of opposition and the length, you know, the depth of the team that they can put out to face you.
Without a doubt.
As long as you get through. And then Giants Steelers in the second semi-final, and you know, based on the games they've had this year, based on the fact that second and third in the league, and the fact that neither have got a trophy this season, and you know, they're going to be going all out to make sure they can get one. I can imagine that being hell of a semi-final, Aaron.
As far as both semi-final games go, I think if you're neutral, that I don't want to, you know, dumb down Dundee, but that could be possibly a more entertaining game. You know, you've got second and third in the league, both brilliant teams, both got good scorers, both afraid to throw themselves about, and I think it's going to be it could be a physical, feisty game. I think possibly plenty of goals, and it's going to be. I'm quite looking forward to watch. One, for the fact I want to see, hopefully, if we make it, who we play. And two, I think it'll be a spectacle for Elite League fans to watch, because they are two great teams. And for me, that game isn't like ours, where we are, I'd say, 70-30 to qualify. That game is literally split down the middle. It literally depends on if the goalies turn up and if both teams turn up. So, you know, Sheffield got the advantage with the majority of their fans going to be there, but Belfast have a quality team and a quality coach, and let's just wait and see. It's going to be. I'm looking forward to it. I want to watch this one.
Sean, obviously, depending on the Devils being in the final, but Aaron's prediction of it being a feisty physical game, it will be music to the ears of Devils fans if it turns out the team we're facing has to go through a bit of a war.
I think it is going to be an absolute war. I'm so looking forward to that game. I've got to be honest with you. I love. I do enjoy a game as a neutral. And if we qualify, I really don't care which one of those we play in the final. We got to go through either team to win it. And It's going to be a really entertaining game, and like you said, it's going to be music to the ears of the Devils fans if they get through, because obviously you'd like to think that we can progress and play one of those teams and we'll be more rested than the other. So yeah, I really don't know which way to call that one. It, like Aaron said, it's not one of those games where you would be comfortable putting money on either side, because it is dead, definitely split dead down the middle.
Yeah, Sheffield winning the last game in Belfast, obviously famously for the Devils, giving us a chance to win the league the following night. But you know, having got the webcast of that one myself, it's you know, one of the better games of hockey I've watched this season. And just hoping that this second semi-final lives up to it. And also hoping that I can watch it, not in an absolutely foul mood, but in a bit of a relaxed, looking forward to, you know, almost like just scouting the opposition type of
thing. Yeah,
I get
you. Yeah.
And just enjoying every hit and every bone crunching thing and every minute, and just hoping for like as much overtime as possible. speaking of which, after we recorded last week, it was announced that if the quarterfinals of the playoffs had gone to overtime, it would have been 10 minutes of 4-on-4, followed by 5 minutes of 3-on-3. I think we're assuming that will be in place at least for the semi-finals, and then whether the final follows suit or just goes continuous overtime, waiting on the league to determine. But what were your thoughts on that setup, Sean, was rather than just going, you know, one thing of the normal 5 minutes 3-on-3?
Yeah, I think that's that is a great way of doing it. I think they've done it in other countries. I think that's the way they go about it before they do get to a shootout. And I think it works well. I think you give that opportunity for it to be, three on three is very, very cagey, and it can be it's back and forth, and it can all depend on a bad bounce or a good bounce. Whereas 4-on-4 is a bit more tactical, so you get that aspect of it in the fact that whoever has the best game plan with it will win, really. And then if you don't get a winner out of it, you get 3-on-3, which is still still not as much of a lottery as a penalty shootout, and is a much more fair way to end the game, and it's exciting and fast. And no one likes to lose in a penalty shootout, do they, really? It's just the worst kind of loss.
In a game, you know, of importance as a playoff semi-final or final, it is, you know, we've got more than enough experience. Like, two playoff finals lost on penalties were bad enough. Don't want another one. And to that end, you know, Aaron, would you like to see that in the final as well? Or would you rather see you 5-on-5 continuous overtime until we have a winner?
For the final, it's the format that is played in the NHL. I'd be happy with that. It's I think, you know, it gets more tense as the period goes on, and if it goes to the next one, you know, it makes the game more exciting. I feel like, anyway, that's what I feel when I watch the NHL. So imagine doing that while you're there. But I think that if they go with what they had in the quarterfinal, that's just as good. You know, I think you still get that excitement of watching that 15 minutes of 10, 4-on-4, and then 5-3-on-3. But then it's kind of a quicker ending where you get the penalty shootout at the end. I don't want it to go that far, because I'd probably stop watching hockey if the Devils lost in penalty shootout, because, oh my God, that wouldn't be fun. But I don't want it to go to overtime full stop. I just want Devils to put 16 goals past each opponent and run away with the competition. But that's not going to happen. But
12-1 in a final's got a nice ring to it.
it's almost like it happened before and we enjoyed it. Well, not personally, but as a club.
Wasn't that like before you were born, Sean?
That's why I just corrected myself and said that's as a club, not me personally.
Sorry.
We still take enjoyment in beating them whenever it happened. Sean, you know, would you rather see the continuous, you know, 5-on-5, or, you know, are you thinking 15 minutes of, you know, reduced players on the ice? you're likely enough to get a goal in out those minutes that you'd be happy with that situation.
Yeah, I can see where Aaron's coming from. That's the way they do it in the best league in the world, and I think that you should be able to do it in that amount of time, especially with your four. It's 15 minutes, like I said, 10 minutes 4-4, 5-3-3, and the penalty shootout means you get it over faster, and it brings about more scoring chances, and teams aren't so cagey. And I think it just makes it exciting, and it's a little bit different. And I think it's a reasonable format. And would I rather it be golden goal, constant OT? Yeah, probably. But I also think that this is a very, very good way to do it. It's a little bit different. You get to see a bit of different game in style. You know, you get your 4-on-4, your 3-on-3, and then if it does come down to it, then you get to that dreaded penalty shootout. But, you know, no one likes losing a penalty shootout, but it is nice to win it. Not that I'd know what it's like to win a penalty shootout in a final. Yes, I would. We did it in 2006. But that was quite fun. I quite enjoyed that.
Yes, that wasn't a bad Challenge Cup. So that is the playoffs. I would say we'll be back next week. Based on last season, I wouldn't want to make any definite promises. Just in case I am in a massive sulk. But I will make every effort to do a podcast next week. There's also about a month's worth of Challenge Cup, League, Conference and Playoff. Those first three winning and then just general playoff drinking. There's a hangover due to hit, I think, the Cardiff Devils fan base that's been building for about a month. So we could all be unconscious till the middle of the week. So it might be a bit of a late one as well. But if there's anything you want us to let us know, your thoughts on the season as a whole, we'll think of a question to ask everyone, I think, probably for the season before it goes out. Again, if we're not all in a sulk as...
Do we want to take send us your tweets of your favourite memories of this season as well? And not like clearly obvious. We all know you all enjoyed the league title and the Challenge Cup win, but you know, single out goals, hits, fights, anything, any individual bits of brilliant play that we can talk about next week.
See, and it's ideas like that is why Sean mans the social media desk and why I don't go near it, because it just doesn't. Sean is where the magic happens.
You're too kind.
I'm not sure what happens where Aaron is, so we'll tweet us that as well. What does Aaron make happen? There we go.
Makes things look pretty.
Aaron does do a very nice graphic. Well done, Aaron. But yeah, thank you again for listening. Apologies for the last minute of not wanting the season to end and stop the podcast. But for now, that is your Red Army Rounder. Every single one of us, the devil inside.